Oh man, we in the building. Another episode, another one. What's going on, everybody? And welcome back to another edition, another installment, a new episode of your favorite interview podcast. You feel me? Black Men Win is back. Hopefully everybody's doing well. Hopefully you've had a great week. My apologies for not coming last week with an episode. Your boy fractured his toe. You feel what I'm saying? Not the Wednesday morning I was expecting last week at all. Like, I literally stubbed my toe at like 6 in the morning. You know how you stub your toe. You just thinking like, okay, you stub your toe. You walk around like, you know, the pain is excruciating. You walk around a little bit. You're like, okay, the pain is out. I'm in the dark, right, like running around. I get into my living room and I look down and my pinky toe is doing this. And I said, oh, shit. And it was like the shock. I went into kind of a little shock, but then the pain was, it just felt like I stubbed my toe. But we're fine. We good. I'm healing for 4 to 6 weeks, so we're all good. And I want to give a shout out to everybody that that sent me well wishes and everything. So we appreciate y'all. Be sure to like, comment, subscribe wherever you listen to the podcast via audio. Shout out to everybody listening to us via audio. And shout out to everybody that continues to watch us on our YouTube channel. So follow us on Epic Echo Productions. Follow us on all social media platforms except for TikTok at Epic Echo Pro. Listen, we have a great interview for y'all today. I'm excited for this one, as I am for all of mine. But I'm very excited to get to know this young man right here. This young fella, you feel what I'm saying? Dynamic speaker, educational consultant, minister. You feel what I'm saying? Very excited to get to know this man. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, aunties and uncles, put your hands together for the one and only Mr. Otis Williams in the building. How we feeling, Mr. O?
Hey, listen, man. I'm good. I'm glad to be on your show. I'm glad you're doing better, man.
First of all, I said his last name wrong. Mr. Otis Wilborn Jr. You feel what I'm saying? My bad.
It's all good.
There we go. Otis, before we get into everything, how about you let our audience know just a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a Cincinnati native, born and raised, now residing in Houston, Texas. As you stated, I'm an educational consultant now. I have a history of working in real estate. I was a top 10 realtor over the last 7 or 8 years. And prior to that, I have a law enforcement background, working in a correctional facility as well as patrolling the streets of Cincinnati. So, it's just been a great journey for me as far as, work-wise. And now I'm just taking my talents and I want to educate the children and other students across the country.
Nice. So Cincinnati. All right. So we're going to get into a little football. You watch football?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What's going on with your Bengals, Otis?
You know what, man?
and by golly me, are you more a Cincinnati Bengals fan or are you a Houston Texans fan? Because you are residing in Houston right now.
Yeah, so no, I'm a Bengals fan.
Okay, Bengals fan. Okay, all right.
But you know, I'm rolling with Houston now because not like I'm leaving Cincinnati, but right. I'm rooting for them as well, right? Because I live here. I had to choose between them or Dallas, and it definitely wasn't going to be Dallas.
Definitely wasn't going to be Dallas because you know everybody a Dallas Cowboy fan. You understand what I'm saying? Everybody a Dallas Cowboy fan. Talk to me a little bit about growing up in Cincinnati. What was that like?
Growing up in Cincinnati was cool. My parents, they moved around a lot. Mm-hmm. We lived in a lot of different neighborhoods. I was living in the suburbs, but going into inner city schools. Mm-hmm. My parents, they worked in very public jobs. My mom was a courthouse worker and my dad was a Metro bus driver. So you can imagine me just being all around with them every day, all the time. But growing up, man, I was into things like talent shows and, just anything that was like community oriented or being in front of people. That I felt like that was just, my favorite thing growing up. And Cincinnati's not a bad place. The cost of living is cool there. The schools I went to was cool. I think it's just, you know, just like any other inner city, but it's a lot different from Houston, though. I will tell you.
Would you say that Cincinnati is maybe a little smaller than Houston?
And oh, very much.
Very much. Okay. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Very much. So I think if you look it up, it might say the population of Cincinnati might be 350 to 400,000.
Wow.
And then like the greater Cincinnati area might be like a million, right?
Oh, wow.
The city of Houston, I think, is 4 million. I think greater Houston is 8 million. Right. So.
Exactly. So totally different. You talked about a little bit about law enforcement in Cincinnati about, you said about 10 years. Yeah. About 10
years. 11 years
of law enforcement. So what I read about you, about 11 years plus, about 10, a decade plus work of law enforcement in Cincinnati. What drove you to, and I think you kind of answered that question already, but what kind of drove you to get into law enforcement? Was it that community aspect that you loved so early on that you were growing, when you were growing up? Was it that community aspect, and maybe what other factors drove you into law enforcement?
Great question. At that time, there was a lot of civil unrest across the country. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of, you know, it seemed like it was a bad relationship between people of color and the police department. Yeah. Right. And so I wanted to use my gift, my talents of communication and bridge the gap. I wanted to do my part for the community. And that's why that was my biggest reason why I joined the force.
Nice. Did you, at your time there, did you feel like the job was done when you left that area for 11 years? Did you feel like when you left, I did enough or tried to do enough or put myself in enough positions to, you know, help others along the way and bridge more gaps, right? Because like you said, initially you wanted to get into it to be that bridge, because again, and as we see even today, we still have law enforcement and racial tendencies within law enforcement, even probably mm-hmm. even more prevalent maybe. But did you feel like when you left that career path for you, did you feel like you left it on a high?
I would say I left it on a high. I had the opportunity to serve a lot of different communities.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing was, it didn't really hit me until the end. Later in my career, I would be out in public, you know, and I had a couple of guys, you know, I would run into, you know, and they would just have, you know, nothing but good things to say. Right. Mm-hmm. One time I'll share this story with you. I was at my daughter's lacrosse game. She plays lacrosse. Mm-hmm. And I'm at the side, you know, I'm on the sidelines, you know, the moms are always like, we need dad to pay attention, you know, right. At this time, you know, right as I had left police work, law enforcement, I got into real estate. And so when that phone rings, you got to answer. Right. And typically those lacrosse games are on weekends. And I got a call from a guy named Roscoe. And Roscoe was a guy. He was actually an inmate that was at the jail when I was working at the jail. So I started as a correctional officer first,
right,
in the beginning of my career. And it really caught me off guard. And I'm thinking, how in the world does this guy get my number, mm-hmm. right? But what he said was, he said, hey, man, I see that you're not in law enforcement anymore. And I went to church, and he said, I saw your business card on the bulletin board. And he recognized my face, and he called me right away. And the next thing I know, man, this guy's like boo-hooing in my ear. And he's like, man, I just want to tell you, I appreciate you treating me like a person in the jail.
Wow.
You know, so it's those kind of moments that I live for. It's right. Those rewarding, you know, experiences. It's things like that, you know, and he wasn't the only one, but I had a couple other guys that approached me on the street to say, hey, man, I appreciate you, you know, not, you know, letting that badge get your head big and, you know, acting crazy and doing things that you shouldn't have, you know, because a lot of guys, I feel like they get that badge and they just lose.
And they lose their minds. Oh, that is a fact. They lose their minds. They get that badge and they forget sometimes. And I feel like this sometimes, they forget that they're black. You know, they forget that they have the same skin tone as me. And if you were in the same position as me, you wouldn't want that to be happening. So respect to that, man. We need more people like you in those arenas.
Mm-hmm.
You transitioned over to real estate. What made you want to do the transition initially?
So I had got injured as a police officer working on the force.
Ah, okay.
So I was working for Cincinnati PD, which is like a large department. And I had gotten to a tussle with a guy. I actually tore my bicep off the bone wrestling with a guy with a gun. Wow,
Jesus.
And God. So I know, right? And God is my witness, man. As I was wrestling with that guy, everything went in slow motion. And I heard God speak to me very audibly. God was like, I'm about to sit you down for a while because I got things for you to do. I heard that very clearly. And then all of a sudden, it wasn't in slow motion anymore. It was kind of like in fast motion.
Right.
Next thing I know, this guy's cuffed, right? Then I'm like, oh, my arm. You know, this don't feel right. And then eventually going to the hospital, and they're like, yeah, you're going to need surgery. So I end up having two surgeries.
Snap.
Oh, yeah, two surgeries. And then I decided, you know what? I'm going to leave the big department. I'm going to go to a small town that's like Mayberry. And I ended up transferring to a police department called Monroe PD. And believe it or not, I was actually the first African-American officer they had in 200 years.
Wow. 200 yeah. years?
200 years of the first hire.
Oh, my God.
The black officer, yeah.
Y'all, the audience can break that down. As much. Jesus Christ, 200 years is crazy, Otis.
Yeah, but you know what?
How was it the first day in there? What was the environment? I mean, 200 years, Otis. I mean, like, listen, they already comfortable. That you know what I'm saying? They ain't trying to see nobody. You walk up in there all melanated and everything, and they like, what?
No, man. I promise it wasn't even like that. They actually embraced me. It was a good experience. I didn't have a bad experience or anything like that. It wasn't uncomfortable. It was cool. They embraced me. And, you know, I think if anything, they probably, you know, I remember one of the supervisors saying something kind of slick on the way out the door, though, as I was quitting. He was like, I was surprised that, you know, a big city cop would have been a little bit more active out here. And I'm like, no, I came here because I was trying to get away from all the crazy stuff in the big city policing. So when I went to the small department, man, I became like the sticker police. I was the guy that would go and find kids in the neighborhood, toss balls with them and stuff like that. You know, that was just that community orienting thing coming out. So that's what I was more into. I wasn't really like a big ticket guy. You know, it's not my thing.
And then you got into the real estate portion of everything kind of came after you moved out of the Cincinnati PD. And then got more into just doing your own thing. And you've been doing that for the last 8 years, yes?
Correct. Yep.
Wow.
So to answer your first question, what really initiated and started all that was that surgery.
Right.
When you get hurt like that, and then you're on light duty, and you realize it just hits you. It's like, you know what? I'm just one of a number. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a new academy class that's going to come in, and they're going to replace me. So at this point, I need to do what's best for me.
Right.
Absolutely. And it was a blessing for me because, you know, as God stated, you know, he was going to sit me down for a while. I was actually able to finish my education working on the desk at desk duty at nighttime. So it was a blessing for me, man. I was able to finish my bachelor's degree in business management. And, you know, shortly after that, I ended up leaving and transferring, you know, to the small department. And maybe like 10 months after that, I was like, you know what? It's time to do something different. And I chose to go into real estate. A lot of people thought I was crazy for doing so, man.
I know, you know, because real estate is always the one, like, people be like just scared of it. But I think if you know what you're really doing, you know the highs and the lows, because everything's come with risk, right? I think when you go in, especially when you go into real estate, you have to understand high risk, high reward, right? But I don't think it's necessarily a bad market or a bad, you know, job to have. I think if you know what you're doing, and obviously if you've been doing it for the past 8+ years, you know exactly what you're doing, right? Like you know exactly what you're doing. Author, am I not correct?
You are.
Yes, author. Tell us a little bit about your book.
Yeah, so I wrote this book here, How to Make Six Figures Selling Real Estate as a Realtor. I wrote that back in, I want to say, 2021.
Wow.
So I transitioned into real estate, and everybody thought I was crazy, man. You know, most people think you're going to leave a job that's a pension paying job and a guaranteed check every 2 weeks for non-commissioned, you know, and that's what I did, man. And I prayed about it, and I felt like just God gave me the sign. Before I met the broker, I said this prayer. I was like, Lord, show me what I need to see. Let me hear the things I need to hear, and let me know what I need to know before I meet this lady.
Right.
And I heard the words paid tuition in my sleep. And so I go meet this lady, and she's like, Otis, you know, I don't say this to everybody, but, you know, I see it all over you. You're going to sell a lot of houses your first year. You're going to be rookie of the year. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. And I believe in you so much, I'm going to pay your tuition. So when I heard those words, pay tuition, I was like, bingo, confirmation. There's my sign. I jumped into it, man, and sold like 38 houses my first year. And the average is usually like 5 to 7 houses, you know, for
in Houston,
first.
Or are we doing this in Cincinnati?
In Cincinnati. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
38 in your first year?
My first year.
Jesus Christ. So when was the transition to Houston?
Last September. So I'm actually officially 1 year in now here.
So you were already thriving and shucking and doing everything and killing it up in Cincinnati.
Correct.
What was the, I guess what my question is, I guess what was the thing for you and maybe your family and your wife to say, I will move down to Houston?
Good question. So I found my wife online. She was living here in Houston. And we were doing the long distance dating for a while. So I came to visit her for 1 weekend. Yeah, we had a whole weekend full of first dates, man. And actually, you can see our story on YouTube, Erica and OJ's love story. So you can check it out.
Look at
that. So, man, after about 20 some flights in 1 year, I was like, yo, it's time to make this permanent. And I flew to Houston, man, and surprised her. She didn't know I was here. Only her family knew I was here, and I proposed to her. And not too long after that, we got married. So I got married officially January of this year.
Congratulations, my guy.
Thank you, man.
Congratulations. Y'all, first of all, the picture, y'all picture on the EPK looks amazing. Okay. y'all look like the first family or something like that. I'm like, look at them looking like the first family in Houston.
You gotta represent.
I'm like, so question, are you still... Now, are you doing real? Are you realtying in Houston and Cincinnati?
So I'm not licensed here in Houston. Right?
Oh, okay, not yet.
So, yeah, I'm still. I'm still trying to. I'm not sure. Right?
I get that. I get that. I understand.
And actually, I was actually working on my license to get my license, real estate license here in Houston prior to coming.
Right.
But what happened was I ended up getting a job. I got hired by a builder here. So I was like, okay, big name builder. And I was like, this might be a good opportunity. But like 9 months in, I was like, you know what? This is just not for me. You know, I was used to working for myself. And so, you know, kind of going back into corporate America and dealing with the like in-office politics, it just was not for me. So I left the builder and I decided to get my own LLC, man, work for myself again. I had been working for myself prior to the last 7 years anyway.
Right.
So to answer your question also though, I'm still selling real estate in Cincinnati.
I was just about that.
I have a team in place back home, several business partners. I work for a company called Real Brokers Technologies.
Nice.
Basically, it's a cloud-based real estate brokerage, right? So I can be anywhere, and as long as I got access to a Wi-Fi signal, I can write a contract or anything like that, I can make it happen. Right. But the cool thing is, man, my team is so dope in Cincinnati, and I got teammates all across the country from here to Arizona to, you know, Florida, everywhere. They're all, like, scattered.
So you've built this to where you can literally be at home and just, you know, all the work that you have in Cincinnati can just be, I can just do it from home. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
More so about the grind and some of the ebbs and flows, because we, as you see a lot of young men, a lot of young people starting their businesses, wanting to start their own businesses.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes they see the highs, right? They see the positive. But they're sometimes never really ready for the lows and the negatives and the ebbs and the flows that go with that. Can you talk to them or talk to us a little bit about some of those ebbs and flows that you may have went through?
Yes. So that's exactly what I wrote my book about, mm-hmm. right? So my book literally is only like 27 pages. I kept it straight to the point.
Right.
Just no fluff. And what I basically talk about is eight principles, man, that I live by. It was like my blueprint. I did everything grassroots. So, you know, in the Black community, you can go to the barbershop and get everything. You can go get a haircut, buy a dog, get a mixtape, and buy some shoes,
yep.
right? So I thought, you know what? I might as well use my grassroots resources, you know, where I'm comfortable at, right? And so I started grassroots things, man. I got a lot of coffee mugs branded with my brand on it, mm-hmm. and some, like, wine openers and things like that. And I went to a barbershop in my neighborhood. They had just opened, called God's Quality Barbershop. I went there, man, and I was like, hey, I just wanted to stop by, introduce myself. I'm not here to sell y'all anything. I just want to show my appreciation to y'all for coming to the neighborhood. And I gave them all branded mugs and all these things, right? Because it's better to give value or give to, you know, people than receive away. And so, yeah, man. And that's how the relationship started. And so I was just doing a lot of things to kind of build relationships with people, networking, learning how to brand myself and things like that. But, you know, to kind of go further on what you asked me, dealing with the highs and lows, I always tell people, listen, before you jump into real estate, you need at least 6 months, 3 to 6 months of saved up money that can cover all your bills. Have all your money saved to the side prior to even jumping into real estate.
Right.
Because you may not get your first deal right away.
Right.
I was lucky to where I just jumped in, and like after my second month, I was closing, you know, I closed two deals on the same day after 2 months.
That's amazing.
After, you know, and so, but it was, when I say grind, my grind was, I was just everywhere. And, you know, and I tell people, I kind of say to my book, I know this might sound weird, but I wanted to brand myself to where people would think about me subconsciously. Like, for example, if I say, ba-da-ba-ba-ba, you're going to say, I'm loving it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's what McDonald's does, right? They brand themselves, and then you find yourself subconsciously singing their song.
Absolutely.
Their jingle. So I had a jingle, man. I had a jingle that a popular rapper named D-Mob from Cincinnati did my jingle. Yeah, and so everybody knows him. And so I hit the most popular podcast in Cincinnati, and I was broadcasting my jingle as their commercials on the podcast. Then I put some money on a radio station, and I had it on the radio station. And so then I printed out some shirts, and I was wearing my shirt everywhere with my brand on the front. Mm-hmm. Then we go to closing, I would give you a shirt, and you'd wear my shirt. Yeah, everyone likes free stuff, right?
Absolutely.
I'm turning my customers into billboards for me.
And see that, and that's the grind right there.
Yeah.
You feel what I'm saying? That's the grind. That's the grind. And I think a lot of folks don't want to do that nowadays, Otis. a lot of people are not trying to do the grind. And it's not a hard grind. I'm not trying to tell you to like grind it out like, you know what I'm saying? But I'm like, in order for you to get it how some of us are still getting it, some of us have gotten it and still going. Mm-hmm. You kind of got to step out of the box. You got to give. You got to sit here and brand. You got to be outside. You got to network. Yep. All the small trinkets that sometimes a lot of young people are sitting here saying we don't want to do that. It's like they still work. Yeah. They still work. You have to be outside. You have to be visible. You have to sit here and make sure you're branding yourself well. You have to sit here and make sure you're being on time. You have to make sure that, you know, everything that you're doing is in place. I'm not saying you're not going to make a mistake, but I'm going to sit here and say that you have to have a little common sense to make sure that you don't make the same mistake twice.
Yeah. One of the biggest things, man, I made sure that I stood out.
And that too.
Right. So my brand was called the Well-Worn Experience. So when mm-hmm. people ask me what that is, I would tell them it's the red carpet treatment of real estate, right? So I would show up to closings in bow ties and, you know, all suited up, suited and booted with bow ties. And they're like, oh, my God, you got that dress for me? I'm like, yeah. Yeah, because I want this to be, you know, a red carpet experience.
Right.
And so then I end up joining forces with a local vendor named Hans Calligraphy, man. She does those welcome mats.
Mm-hmm.
And she does calligraphy by hand.
Oh, wow.
And so she'll write it on there, and then she does like this hard paint, and it's like permanent. And so it just it's very durable. It stays on there forever. And so I would make a brand, like a name for myself. Everyone was like, man, I see you everywhere I turn around. You taking a picture with a mat and, you know, a client, and everybody was loving it. So people were like, where are you getting these mats? I'm like, just buy a house and I'll get you one. Don't worry about it.
Right.
But no, it was a part of my branding, man. And you just have to do unique things to make yourself stand out. But most importantly, man, I'm a firm believer that if you love on your clients, you take care of them, they will love on you back. They will keep referring you. And so in the real estate game, most people don't get a referral only gig until like 5 years. But by my second year, I was referral only.
Oh, there you go. And see, that's how you know you are part of the community and you are community driven. That's how you know. Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about Talent and Tees. I know you're an educational consultant. I know you are here to teach the kids and make sure the kids get these good old education. Talk to us a little bit about Talents and Ties, because I love that. The talent and ties,
man, that was something I prayed about. It was a God idea. I asked God to, you know, give me a God idea, man. And I heard him say talent and ties. And so I wrote a program called Talent and Ties. And essentially what I do is I take, you know, the principles of my book. Mm-hmm. A lot of the principles out of my book, which is entrepreneurial principles. It ain't even got to be in real estate. It could just be in anything that's like sales oriented. Right. I take those principles and I'm going to educate the students in the classroom. In addition to that, I'm going to teach them how to tie a tie. So the whole program is based on you identifying your talent. So when I was in elementary, I would have teachers say, he's such a smart kid. He's this and that. But he talks too much.
Right? Me.
Guess what? I learned that that was my talent.
Right.
Same. My gift. I'm a communicator. Mm-hmm. And so my son just had open house last week. And they're like, hey, he's a great kid, but he talks too much. And I laughed. I'm like, that's his talent. He's just like his dad.
Yeah.
Right. And so I want to go in all the schools across America, whether it be elementary, middle school, high school, colleges, help these students identify what they're really good at and take these entrepreneurial grassroots skills that I teach in my book, teach them how to develop a business from that, how to write a plan, how to stick to it, how to brand themselves, and build a business with it. And in addition to that, teach them how to tie a tie.
I love that. I love that. Because a lot of these kids don't know how to tie a tie. Oldest. They don't know. They just going to put the clip on. That's it.
Yeah.
And we got to teach them. Listen, yeah. I can't tell you how many times my uncles, OGs, was like, hey, we got to teach you how to tie a tie. Now, some of them tried to, you know, they taught me wrong, which is fine. You know what I'm saying? But, once you learn, you learn. You know what I'm saying? And it's just, absolutely. I don't know. It's something about just knowing how to tie a tie. It was just like a rite of passage or something like that. You know what I'm saying? It just felt right, you know? And and I think just incorporating that with making sure that our young men are figuring out their skills, abilities, and talents. I think that's such an important notion, because I think schools maybe just see our black kids, specifically our black boys, and they just say like, okay, well, like you said, he's smart, but he just talked too much. Like that's, okay.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie, with little Billy over here, you're going to sit here and try to figure out what's going on with him. Well, why aren't you not doing that with our kids? You understand what I'm saying? And I love that you are taking initiative in doing that, because again, I was the same way. I talk too much, but I understood. I'm a communicator, bro. I got my degrees in it.
Right.
I got my bachelor's and my master's degree in it. I knew the talent. I knew what it was. You understand what I'm saying? And so I love how you're turning the negative connotation into a positive aspect. I love that. I genuinely love that.
You know, tying a tie is not easy, right?
No, it's not.
Right? And you got to learn it. And so I tell people all the time, it's like tying your shoe. Once you learn it, It's a life skill that you don't forget. And guess what? The program ain't just for little boys. It's for girls too. Because that amazing little girl might help someone in her household, or that little girl's going to grow up to be a wife one day.
Yes.
Or have a kid, and she might have to tie his tie, right? But that's just something that she could teach her kids regardless of they're a boy or girl, right?
Right.
So, but metaphorically in the program, I teach them how to look at the tie in a symbolism way, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's not going to be easy, but with the right patience and precision and resilience, we can get this thing together.
Hey, man, Otis. Lastly, before I get you out of here.
Yeah.
Talk to me about family, man. I see that you are, you got your wife, you got your kids. Again, y'all looking like the first family of Houston and Cincinnati out here. But for real, talk to me about the importance of just being a father, a husband, and how important it is to have that black father figure in the household.
Great question. It is so powerful to have a father or a father figure in a child's life.
Yes.
We have a blended family of five. So I had two kid children when I met her, and she had three, right? Oh, and wow. So our age range. Yes, our ages of our kids range from 21 to 9. So 9, 2 12s, a 18, and a 21.
Wow.
I'm glad you asked that, because the reality is, man, I parent them all differently.
Right.
All of them are different, right? And so it takes a great deal of compassion and patience to be able to communicate on all their levels. Because I'm not going to communicate with the 12 or the 9-year-old like I do with the 21
and 18-year-old. Exactly.
But most importantly, man, I saw something today, and I think this will really answer your question. It's like, how do you spell love in this time? T-I-M-E, right? And so out of all my children, it's only one that I really don't see. And she's in Ohio. But, you know, it's time, man. You got to be present. It's better to be present than give presents.
Woo, 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 woo! Wait a minute.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Otis, hold up.
Yes, sir.
He said it's too shit. Oh, shit. That shit made me cough. Hold on. Oh, shit.
My hey, man, don't break your other toe now.
You feel me? He said, oh, man. He said, it's better to be present,
yes, sir,
than to give presents. I don't.
Yes, sir.
All right. Okay. Okay. Hey, we taking that one, Otis. We taking that one. Because that is a
Yes, sir.
I don't think they heard you in the back when you said that, because that is such a and I applaud fathers who are doing that and mm-hmm. being more present than just giving the presents and the gifts.
Yeah.
Because what I know and what I've seen just from family, friends, close friends, when we start to kind of debunk our family tree and family history, we find that sometimes our parents maybe not have did it right. Right. And we find that our dads or our mothers, right, were just giving presents and not being present. And so that's why I asked that question, because I genuinely see more fathers nowadays, and I've said this on this platform before, mm-hmm. I've seen over the years more fathers, more black fathers, especially the ones that I have grown to see on television or just know, just out, you know, just in the community or whatnot, grow up, become dads, become fathers, and really be in that child's life, whether they're with the mother or not. You understand what I'm saying? Really be in that child's life, present. You understand what I'm saying? And not just present, just to be there, but present and being in the whole framework of the child from start to freaking finish, and then even beyond that.
Oh yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? So I'm loving that our black men are doing that. and not just giving presents, but also being present. So when you said that, that was referenced that quote is going up somewhere.
That's what's up
in the rafters for real. Otis, I appreciate you coming.
Give you one quick second.
No, go ahead.
Because if I don't answer, she gonna get me, man. It is so important to have a supportive and lovely black queen by your side.
You better say that shit again, Otis. You better say that shit again, Otis.
Listen, man, I have a queen that is, she is like a blessing that I've been praying for a long time.
I know that's right, Otis. That's, see, first of all, Otis is glowing. I can tell. You feel what I'm saying? When he talk about that woman, because listen, when you got a good one, a great one, an awesome one, and knows that's going to hold you down.
Yes, sir. Woo! Yes, sir. And pray your face off.
Yeah.
She could pray and just, man, tear the house down.
That's it. And see, that's what I'm talking about. That right there is why they are the first family of Cincinnati. That's what I'm talking about right there. Otis, what do you have coming up? Any speaking engagements that people maybe can contact you with or see you at, or anything that you have coming down the pipeline for the rest of the year, or maybe even the 2025 coming up?
My next two speaking engagements are actually private events for a Keller Williams brokerage here in Houston.
Oh, wow.
And so I will be speaking at those events. So I can't necessarily give out their information. But you can personally hit me up on my website, Otis, O-T-I-S, well, was otiswellbornjr.com. Maybe you can put all the info in the bio or something, but otiswellbornjr.com. You can catch me on Instagram at Speak Life, or you can hit me up at Otis_the_realtor is my other Instagram page. You can find me on Facebook, but hit me up. I'd love to come speak at any organization, church, school, what have you.
Oh, definitely. Listen, Otis, we appreciate you for coming through. Thank you for dropping gems, giving us a little bit about yourself, and dropping the quote of the year. Do you hear me? I don't think Otis understands. He just dropped the quote of the year, like quote of 2024. That's it.
Love it, man.
You dropped it, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show, brother. We appreciate you.
Appreciate you. Thanks
thank
for having
you, man.
Me.
No problem. And to everybody else, thank you all for showing up and showing out. You know what I'm saying? Coming into the pod and coming in and having this great interview with us. Be sure to like, comment, subscribe wherever you listen to the podcast, of course. We are available on our Patreon, Epic Echo Productions. That's where you can get this podcast a little bit early. $3 a month. Free trial for the first week. And of course, we give you about a 10-15% off discount off your first month. So go ahead and check that out. That's where you can find exclusive content from Epic Echo Productions. And we will be back with another one. All right. We love y'all. We thank y'all. And of course, it's been another one. Good. And we'll see y'all on the next one. Peace.